Big city gets smaller.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for joining me as Marketplace covers the financial crisis fallout. There was a big meeting this morning at Citigroup, town hall style. The bank's CEO delivered some bad news. Citigroup will eliminate tens of thousands of jobs. And that might not be enough to get the bank back in the black. Marketplace's Janet Babin reports from North Carolina Public Radio.
Citigroup CEO Vikram Pandit told employees that about 50,000 jobs would be lost. As of September, the company had about 350,000 employees worldwide. The bank also hopes to reduce expenditures by 16% to 19% next year. Citigroup has been stunned by risky assets and bad loans. Last year, the company lost $20 billion. Christopher Whalen at Institutional Risk Analytics says Citigroup's troubles predate the financial crisis.
They have always had a higher expense profile than their larger peers, and they've always had higher loss rates. In other words, the write-offs that they have to take on their credit card and their consumer loan portfolios have typically been higher than their peers.
Whalen says the job cuts announced today will help, but the company won't recover until the second half of next year. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Besides Citigroup, the other big story this week will be the car makers. Senate Democrats plan to introduce a bailout bill today, and a vote could come by Wednesday. Wall Street is clearly anxious. More losses this morning. The Dow is down almost 2%, 146 points to 8350. The NASDAQ is down 18, and the S&P 500 has fallen 13. In Europe, shares are down 1 to 2% so far. Asia, the markets finished mixed. Also today, the Senate holds a hearing on the nomination of Neil Barofsky. He would oversee the $700 billion rescue package. He'd have about 100 people working for him and have his work cut out. Marketplace's Steve Henn explains.
Since the bailout bill was signed into law, the Treasury Department's invested more than $210 billion in banks and insurance companies. It's done all this with almost no oversight. That's created many opportunities for mischief, says Republican Senator Charles Grassley, the ranking member of the Financial Services Committee.
Most of it is corporate executives too stupid to realize that they're caretakers of taxpayers' money.
AIG executives, for example, recently went on a hunting retreat in Europe.
And in a sense, thumbing their nose at the taxpayers.
Grassley says appointing Neil Barofsky to police the program should remind these executives who they're working for. Right now, Barofsky's a prosecutor in New York specializing in securities fraud. Grassley says the painful experience of Iraqi reconstruction taught Congress that it's crucial to get an inspector general's office up and running fast. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
The top executives at Goldman Sachs have decided to forego their bonuses this year. They're giving up potentially tens of millions of dollars. They'll only be eligible for their base salaries, about 600 grand. A spokesman says the executives felt it was the right thing to do. This is the Morning Report for Monday, November 17th on Marketplace.org. Wall Street isn't the only place where executive salaries are raising some eyebrows. There's a report out today that shows college presidents are making more than ever. Here's Renita Jablonski.
The Chronicle of Higher Education says pay for top executives at public research universities was up almost 8% for the last school year. Chronicle editor Jeff Salingo says most of those salary decisions were made before the financial crisis.
That being said, I still think that this is likely to cause some controversy.
The Chronicle reports half of the presidents at the country's 40 top public and private schools also sit on corporate boards. Take Gordon Gee, the president of Ohio State. He sits on four, including Hasbro, Limited Brands, and Massey Energy.
For Massey Energy, he gets $113,000 in cash, another $77,000 in stock awards. I mean, you add up all this plus his salary.
And it's a lot of money. Gee's already the highest-paid public university president. His annual compensation from OSU tops more than $1.3 million. I'm Renita Jablonski for Marketplace.
Today, Japan said its economy contracted 0.4% in the third quarter. That's the second quarter in a row Japan's economy has shrunk. And you know what that means? Recession. But as Marketplace's Scott Tong reports, Japan's recession is different than others.
Japan's recession is not a subprime story. Its banks are healthy. The problem is exports, the overseas sales of everything from cars to electronics to heavy equipment. And the decline is not just because of American soccer moms and dads. The Eurozone just entered recession, and China is slowing dramatically too. Take the case of Toyota. Its balance sheet now looks so wobbly that its AAA debt rating is now in question. Today, the Fitch Ratings Agency placed Toyota in the Ratings Watch negative category. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Starting today, travelers from seven countries no longer need visas to enter the U.S. They're all countries in Eastern Europe, except for South Korea. And that country is the one the U.S. travel industry is most interested in. Ashley Milne-Tite has more.
Koreans are among the top five international visitors to the U.S. About 800,000 Korean tourists come over each year, and they tend to spend more than the average foreign visitors, $4,000 per trip. Jeff Freeman is with the Travel Industry Association. He says waiving visa requirements is a great way to boost the U.S. economy.
You often see that inclusion in the visa waiver program can double travel from a given country into the United States, or where a country has been removed from the visa waiver program, as Argentina was some time ago, it cut travel from that country in half to the United States.
Korea Air is busy adding new flights from Korea to cities like L.A., Washington, and Vegas to accommodate the expected hordes. Still, Freeman says America needs to do much more PR to reclaim the 2 million visitors of all nationalities it's lost since 2000. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Today, the people of the Czech Republic and Slovakia celebrate what they call their Velvet Revolution. On November 17, 1989, they began the overthrow of their communist governments. 3 years later, the two states became separate, independent countries. Both are flourishing today. Slovakia has done especially well. But there are concerns about how Slovakia might be affected by the global financial crisis. Stephen Beard reports from the Slovakian capital, Bratislava.
Slovakia has every reason to celebrate. Living standards are rising fast. Last year, the economy grew at the quickest rate of any developed country. And within weeks, Slovakia takes a crucial step towards closer European integration. As this official song proclaims, Slovakia will adopt the euro. Reforms in the late 90s revolutionized the economy. Lower taxes and more flexible labor laws attracted foreign investors. Once it was weighed down with heavy, inefficient industries. Now Slovakia is a manufacturing superstar. Volkswagen, Peugeot and Kia all set up state-of-the-art factories here. They build more than 500,000 cars a year. That makes Slovakia, per capita, the biggest car maker in the world. But that clearly could make this country vulnerable in the current crisis. Analyst Radovan Durana.
If there is a serious downturn, demand for the Slovak production will decrease and may lead to loss of jobs.
And there's another worry about the financial crisis, a fear that it could sour public support for economic reform. People in this open-air market blame American-style capitalism for the crisis. This man says Americans are the guilty ones. Who else causes so much trouble? While this man says America's wild capitalism shouldn't be allowed, Peter Kitchener is head of the Slovakian Business Association. He says that Slovakia's current left-leaning government could exploit this sentiment to curb the free market.
This could be a serious threat for Slovakia in the future. We have now government that could decrease the level of free market in Slovakia.
Already, the government has tightened the labor code and made it tougher to fire workers. In spite of its phenomenal transformation, Slovakia may have peaked as a manufacturing paragon. In Bratislava, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
I filled up my gas tank yesterday, and when the pump stopped, I thought it was a mistake. It was so cheap. The national average is now $2.10, and 16 states have gas under $2. But my friend Alan Sloan says now is the time for a gas tax.
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
All right, Alan, make your argument. Why should we have a gas tax now?
Because if we're going to get people to buy fuel-efficient or alternate energy cars, you don't do it when gas prices start at $2, run to $4, and by the time, say, General Motors, if any of this happens in Washington, comes out with its magic green vehicle the government's going to offer it to make, it may well be that no one's going to want to buy them again.
Do you really think that people will go back to their gas-guzzling ways, considering what else is going on in this economy?
Yeah, I think they will. And the reason I think that is I remember, I'm so old, Scott, I remember 73, 74 when oil went from, I think, $2 a barrel to like 20 or 30, and everyone said it was the end of the world, and we've learned something from it. And everything reverted as soon as oil prices went down. And it's going to happen here, too. People will absolutely go back to their gas-guzzling ways if the price of gas stays at $2 or goes even lower. Of course they will. And we'll be at the mercy of events all over again. And I don't think that's any way to run a country.
And what happens if oil and gas go back to the levels they were in July, and then the tax is added on top of that?
People survived more or less at four. And if there's a problem caused by this, you know, for people who can't pay, you'll give them their gas tax back in some form or other. I'd rather we pay this tax to ourselves than we paid it to Saudi Arabia or Russia or Venezuela.
And how do you think this would benefit, if it would, the American car makers?
Well, if these companies are still alive and we got rid of these what I consider idiotic rules about average fuel economy, where we mandate that the average of mileage of the auto fleet has to be this or that, and then we say SUVs are really trucks, so they're not included. Mm-hmm. If you're running a U.S. car company, you go mad with this. If you say, here's the market, go serve it, that's a lot easier. Let these guys make the cars they think they can sell. And if there are high, if gasoline prices are high enough, the socially conscious among us will be happy. The consumers will buy this. It's a lot better than being at the mercy of events, which is what our energy policy has consisted of.
It's an interesting topic, Alan. Thanks for your input. Alan Sloan from Fortune Magazine.
My pleasure.
And I'm guessing you might have an opinion about this one way or the other. Feel free to share it with us online at our website, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.